You're listening to Wheelationships.
All right. Well, Tim concluded last week's class talking about the problems that we encounter when we run into fences, whether they be somebody else's boundary against us or one that we have put in place in our life that they have run into, and we don't like them because they're painful, they're unpleasant. But the real issue is when we encounter that, how do we respond, or how are they responding? And as he told us last week, that sometimes the problem is just plain old ignorance. There is a problem there that I wasn't aware of. There was a way you were feeling that I wasn't clued in on. I missed that. It's just ignorance is the problem. But it's very important that you communicate. Do not assume. Communicate clearly. Don't cop out on your responsibility of communicating by saying, well, how could they not know? Surely they know. Anybody would know. And when he talked about that last week, I was reminded of a conversation I had actually heard on television that week where the woman was asked specifically, have you told him how you feel? And her response to that question was, well, yes, in so many words I have. Well, what that really meant was she probably did a lot of indirect communicating and not a lot of direct, clear communicating. And it's very hard for someone to address an issue that they don't really know what the issue is or really unclear as to what the specifics are. Even when it seems clear to us, you need to communicate. So when love and desire for connection are the motivators, then the one that might have previously said, I didn't know this, I was unaware, that ignorance was there, then they're going to begin to make changes to restore things, because ignorance is not a character problem, it's just an information problem. But there's a big difference between I don't know this and I don't accept this. I won't accept this reflects character, not ignorance. And that's where we're picking up today's lesson. So suppose the other person that you are having a conflict with, you're in a relationship with, they're aware of your feelings, but they ignore them. They minimize them. They just completely negate them. They resist your fences. It's not hopeless, but you're going to have your work cut out for you. You're just going to have to approach them differently than someone who's willing to work with you on those issues. Now, in previous conflicts, you were able to work together as a team. You were striving for the same goal, and that was connection or restoration of some that conflict had separated. But in this case, when you have someone that's resistant to your fences, they are completely careless and don't care at all about your feelings or how you approaching it or how you feel about it, then you have an adversary. You're dealing with someone who has no regard for your fences. Now on the plus side, you've got God, and hopefully you have other connections, very healthy, fence boundary honoring people in your life that are going to support you, encourage you through that difficult relationship that you have. But don't expect cooperation from someone who does not possess the character to be able to work through that situation. They have that character handicap, and expectation's a biggie here. When someone doesn't possess the character to respect your fences, don't be shocked when they don't respect your fences. And a lot of times we are, again and again and again and again. I can't believe they've done this again. Don't be surprised. That's what their character has equipped them to do, that as flawless as it is. So when we have someone like this in our life, there are some do's and some don'ts that can affect the relationship. First, we're going to tackle the do's. I mean the don'ts. Sorry. Thank you. The don'ts. Remember them, memorize them, study them, stick them in your wallet. Commit them to memory. These are some don'ts you make sure you are not doing in relationships, but especially with one who is fence resistant, where you have that conflict. Don't deny or minimize the situation if it's a significant fence problem. Hiding from reality is not going to change reality. Don't ignore the situation, hoping that it's going to get better. Time alone is not going to heal character immaturity. It's going to take a whole lot more than that. Don't become more compliant and pleasing, hoping that love is going to fix everything. Again, it's going to take more than love for a character to mature and to develop. Here's this next one. Don't nag. Repeating the same protest over and over never changed anyone. especially a fence-resistant type person. Don't be... Oh, am I going too fast? I'm sorry. I get on the horse and I ride at full speed.
To what? You talk real slow. I know Southern shorthand. Talk real slow.
All right. All right. Everybody caught up with me? And I do apologize. Can you tell my husband and I have different temperaments? He's nice and easygoing. I zip along. All right, don't be constantly surprised at their behavior. Kind of touched on that already. It's a sign of defensive hoping against hope. You know, don't expect things to stay, I mean, don't to change until you've initiated change. It just beeped at me. When you have fence-resistant people in your life, until they have encountered some kind of pain from your boundary, they're not going to change. They're going to stay just the way they are. So until you have initiated a change, nothing's going to change. So it's up to you. Don't blame is the next blank there. Don't blame. Very few conflicts, especially when we're talking in the context of marriage conflicts, marriage boundary conflicts, very few conflicts involve an all innocent person and an all guilty person. We want to perceive them that way, but that's not the case. So you have to take ownership of your part of the issue. Work on that log in your own eye before you try to start dissecting the splinter in somebody else's. All right, and on this, along the same lines there, don't take total ownership of the problem either. If you rescue that other person from their part, you're only going to make the issue worse. Proverbs 19:19 says, "Let angry people endure the backlash of their own anger. If you try to make it better, you'll only make it worse." We say it a million times in here. Consequences are wonderful teachers. Don't blockade those. Don't interfere with those. All right, now we got the don'ts out of the way. We're going to take a look at the do's. The list is a whole lot longer, but that's a good thing because it equips you with some proactive things to do to make these difficult relationships better. And I had to chuckle, if you've already been to first service, man, you're going to get some double teaching here because it's all about we were made to connect. We should want to connect. Don't try to avoid people that we find to be difficult. The goal here is resolving conflict. Not fleeing conflict, but resolving conflict. Excuse me. So regardless of who your fence-resistant person is, whether it's a boss or friend, a mother, or even a spouse, you got to work at resolving these things. And there's some things that you can do to aid the relationship. Number one, first thing you can do, expand your connections. When you're dealing with a fence-resistant person, there's going to be conflict. Really, when you have a relationship of any kind, there's going to be conflict. But when you've got somebody of that kind of character where they're really fence resistant, your no means nothing to them, they're not going to care, there's going to be conflict at a whole lot higher frequency than your other relationships. It's going to be guaranteed. And that conflict will always threaten the closeness that you have with them. And with some, after you've worked to resolve conflict, sometimes the boundary is a little more limited contact. But what if that person is your spouse or maybe a parent or a close relation, close family member where contact is necessary? It's unavoidable. And many times those are the very people that we've invested our deepest emotions into. So we need them to be healthy as they can be. And it becomes critical then that we enlarge our heart to include other people. These are healthy connections that will help us to be encouraged, to be comforted, strengthened during these times of stress boundary conflicts. Now, obviously, use wisdom. If you are a married person, you're not going to go to someone of the opposite sex to seek encouragement and strength and comfort during those conflict relationships that you have, no matter who it might be with. Choose wisely. Also, in picking someone of a wise and noble character, don't just pick anybody. Sometimes you have a tendency to maybe go to some longtime friend. Well, you know, that might not be the wisest person. They may just want to be siding with you and go, yeah, what a bum he is, and just agreeing with you. You need to choose wisely who you're going to for, and I apologize for my voice. It's kind of coming and going. Oh, that's good. Thank you. I don't think hot chocolate will help me. but I'm sorry if it's a distracting to you. No, you know, I'll probably choke or something while I'm talking on it. But thank you. We'll get this. We'll get it. But choose wisely on those who encourage you. Psalms 1:1-3 says, "Oh, the joys of those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or stand around with sinners, or join with scoffers. They delight in doing everything the Lord wants. Day and night they think about his law. These are like trees planted along the riverbank, bearing fruit each season without fail. Their leaves never wither, and in all they do, they prosper." Those are the kind of people you want to expand your heart to. Those are the kind of people you want to connect with so that you're gaining their comfort, their strength, their wisdom as you're going through difficult conflicts. All right, so you need to expand your connections. Number two, grow and own. As we open up to other people, we're going to let our own needs be known. We're going to be more exposed. We're going to see ourselves clearer. Our own faults are going to come to light. And it's very sad as the person who feels they don't need anybody else. They don't have to expand and open up their heart and their life to anybody else. They don't need anyone. And when we allow connection, we're going to grow. And when we stay disconnected and closed off, we're not going to grow. We're very familiar with a person we've known for years and years and years. And for the last 30 years of her life, she's been completely alone. You know, no husband, the children are grown and gone, and they're not in the house anymore. And she's failed throughout the years to make significant connections in her life. The ones that she has are very superficial. And when you see somebody like that, what happens is their world gets smaller and smaller. Their own particular needs get bigger and bigger. And before you realize it, the most important thing is me, and that's all they see is, how is it going to affect me? How is it going to impact me? And I've said before, you know, I live with five other people that are constantly telling me, this is not all about me. And I'm having to adjust and change and mature and grow up, and that's what we do. We sharpen one another. We've used that scripture before. You know, friends sharpen other friends. We become sharper when we allow those connections to take place in our life. And God invites us into relationships, not only with other people, but also with himself, so that we will grow. You're forced to deal with old hurts. You ever try to raise kids when you have unresolved issues with how your parents raised you? It's kind of hard to ignore. You know, you're forced to deal with it because that voice from your past is lurking and sticking its nose into your present day business. We're forced to deal with things from the past. We're forced to forgive. We have to learn forgiveness. We have to let go of things. We have to apply grace. We have to give compassion. You become more honest with yourself. And when all that stuff takes place, what's happening? You've grown up. You mature. Ephesians 4:14-15, "Then we will no longer be like children, forever changing our minds about what we believe because someone has told us something different, or because someone has cleverly lied to us and made the lie sound like the truth. Instead, we will hold to the truth in love, becoming more and more in every way like Christ, who is the head of this body, the church." See, God does not put these difficult relationships in our life to punish us or to trick us or to, you know, play some kind of dirty trick on us, but he uses those relationships to reorient us into growing, loving relationship with him as the source of our life. There's always a purpose that God will use everything in our life to strengthen our relationships, not only with him and with others. When we're forced to help another person learn to grow, learn to take responsibility, we're going to be learning those things more and deeper as well as we're walking alongside with somebody else. And it's very tempting to want to just write them off out of our life. You know, I don't want to have to deal with this. I'll cut you off, you're gone. But when we do that, we miss the opportunities for growth, and especially our own personal growth. So it's real important. Make that goal, resolving that conflict. Now, when we stop the don'ts that we mentioned earlier, and we start addressing this boundary character issue in a difficult relationship, we're going to find out some things that perhaps we didn't know before. Like, what makes them think the way they think? You know, why does that person have this particular issue? You might also find out why you have trouble setting a fence or a boundary in that relationship. It may be just a particular relationship or relationships in general. You're going to learn how to be more honest, first in those relationships that feel really safe to you. So that's good practice for when you have to be honest in relationships that don't feel quite as safe to you. You're going to learn how to receive love and support when you fail in your limits and you need grace and encouragement and feedback. It's very important that you open up to others and accept that love and support and not close yourself off. And it's very easy to blame the problems in a relationship on the difficult person. But as long as you keep perpetuating that myth, then nothing's going to change. Because change and freedom begin the moment you realize that to some extent, you have contributed to the problem. It may be, like we've just talked about, maybe you had trouble setting a fence that you should have set. Maybe you weren't as honest as you should have been. But it's to some degree you've contributed. And when you realize that you have a part in it, then you finally have something that you have the power and the authority to control and to change. And it's a wonderful place to start. So you need to grow and own. Number three, identify a specific issue. Now that sounds really obvious, but a lot of times it's something we really fail to do. What specifically is the boundary violation that you've encountered? And a lot of times we feel frustration, we feel anger, we feel hurt, and we just sort of stop and wallow in those feelings without really stopping identifying what violation has occurred that's made me feel those particular emotions. Or we grab onto a symptom instead of really looking at what the root of the problem is. We fail to examine deeper what's specifically wrong. So in identifying the problem, we need to learn some things. So the first question, of course, is what fence of mine is being violated? So let's put it into an example form here. Suppose you say, and this is completely hypothetical, I'm not passing a hint here, completely hypothetical. My husband is chronically late. My boundary of being on time and respecting the time of others is being violated. Okay, so you've identified specifically one issue that is at hand. So then you ask, how does it affect you and your love for that fence violator? All right, well, I feel less important than all his other commitments because he's not on time to the things that matter to me. It causes me to distance myself from him. Okay, so the next question then becomes, is this an occasional problem or is this a pattern? Well, he's done it 3 or 4 weeks for the past 10 years. Okay, obviously there's a pattern there. It's not something that just crops up occasionally that you need to deal with and get over. Why is it important for me to risk conflict over this issue? So why should I work to resolve it instead of just brushing it under the rug? Well, I don't want to resent him. I want to feel close to him. I want him to be on time for meals and other commitments. I don't want that distance to be there. So it's important that you get to the specific issue. And notice I said a specific issue. A is a singular article meaning one, not issues, plural. You have to be very careful not to create a long list of deficiencies that you want to try and tackle all at once. You benefit no one by overwhelming them with this list of wrongs that seem endless. They're going to want to quit before you've even started. So you want to pick and resolve issues one at a time. And of course, I will say the only exception to that might be if there's a very severe issue like drugs or alcohol that's going to need to take a lot more drastic action. But typically, one issue at a time. So when you're dealing with that one issue, then the question of character might arise. So you take it a step farther. And the next question is going to be, am I requesting them to change heart or behavior? In other words, am I asking for a character change or am I asking for a behavior change? Because those are two completely different things. Put it in an example again to help you see. Suppose the wife is a loving but very disorganized person. The house is always a mess, and even though the husband does his part to keep things tidy, does the husband ask her to value his feelings and the desire that he has for more order in the home, or does he just ask her to do a better job at keeping the house clean? How you approach it matters. I was able to kind of pinpoint to an example from many years ago that kind of played this out in my mind, where that was very much the case. The wife was very disorganized, great lady, very loving, but the house, you kind of had to do this to sort of, you know, walk through things in there. And it was not the way the husband desired the home to be. And he really did pitch in a lot. He really did do a lot, but it just never quite got that way. But instead of approaching her internally with his heart and his how he felt about it, and kind of gave how she felt about it, he just complained about the condition of the home. He bought her books about Messie's manual, you know, how to keep a better home, you know. It was tackling the behavior and not really the attitude. Because this is what you're going to find if you address the attitude first before you address the behavior. Solving an internal issue is going to help solve an outward symptom. See, when you have a wife, using the same example, when you have a wife that loves her husband and is concerned about his feelings of wanting a home that has more order, and she sees that, yeah, she's got a problem with some structure and organization, she's going to take steps to solve or at least improve how she's contributing to the problem. But the behavior was, I mean, the attitude was addressed first. Asking for internal change often helps you learn about the other person's attitude about fences. Are they cooperative or are they resistant? If she is fence-friendly, then she's going to want to change. If she's fence-resistant, she's going to deny, she's going to cast blame, she's going to rationalize, and she's going to completely ignore how you feel about the situation. And then everyone, even a fence-resistant person, needs to be invited to change internally before dealing with consequences. Inviting her to change internally, you put grace before truth, and you treat her as you want to be treated. Now, if it's truly a fence-resistant person, they are going to completely negate how you feel, even though that's how you approach it first. They're going to refuse to see or own the issue. So, what happens when you have humbly asked and you've approached them in that manner for some internal change, you're met with resistance, then you move on to the specific behavior and consequences. Here's an example tagging along that same husband-wife scenario. Honey, I know you think I'm overreacting about the house. I've tried to see it your way and deal with my part. I guess I must disagree with your opinion. So even if you think I'm wrong, I really need some changes in the way our home is kept up. So until we can agree on our perspectives on the house, I'm going to do the following. I'll do my part in housekeeping, but I will not be funding any of the home improvement projects that you have asked for. And I hope we can come to better terms while we continue to discuss this. It's been addressed, there was humility, there was love, but now the behavior itself is addressed with some consequences involved. Don't tackle behavior until you first address attitude, both yours and theirs. Okay? Number four, any comments, questions before we zip on to number four? All right, number four, validate. And for some reason or the other, do you have your hand up, Gail?
No.
Oh, okay, sorry. That's how you get in trouble at auctions. You put that hand anywhere near there. Validate, it's one of those $4 psychological words that to me is just so overused. But the truth of the matter is, even a fence-resistant person wants to know that how they feel has been understood by the other party, that you understand their perspective. Now, I don't in any way consider myself a fence-resistant person, but I have found in my marriage with Tim that a lot of times I will continue explaining something until I've got the message that he has heard and understood what my perspective is. We had an example just this past week with a situation came up with one of our kids, and we had completely different perspectives on how the child should be, you know, how the situation needed to be treated, how we needed to respond to the situation, and we were just on different perspectives about it. And I found myself, we had a conversation, we had the discussion, and, you know, we were in different places about 10 minutes later, and I found myself coming back and bringing up the conversation again because I wanted to make sure, I wanted to feel confident that he had heard my heart. Now, I started that 10-minute later conversation with, I am not trying to change your mind, because I really wasn't. That wasn't my goal. Now, if he changed his mind, I would have thought that was a bonus, but that wasn't my goal. That wasn't my intent. I wanted to make sure that he clearly understood where I was coming from and why. And he did. Now, nothing changed. And that was okay with me because I knew he understood where I was coming from. I could then trust in his leadership and accept the decision that he was making and go on. I was great with that. Now, as this particular situation happened to turn out, there were factors that I had not thought of. And I was so thankful that I went with his leadership on that matter because it was truly the wisest thing to do in that particular situation. So anybody, they want to know that you've heard them, that you understand their perspective and where they're coming from. And most of the time, people in general, they don't like changing. They have a hard time changing their feelings, especially when they feel like you have dismissed their feelings or you have negated them in some way. They're just going to dig their heels in all the more. When they feel you misunderstood them, and this, to me, is one of the key things to remember. When they feel you misunderstand them, they don't trust that you have their best interest in mind, and they're going to feel threatened. And if you're a husband in this room today, I cannot stress to you enough how critical that is to the heart of your wife. She wants to be able to trust you, but a lot of that is in your responsibility on making her feel heard and understood. As the husband there. So when you take initiative to show you understand, that's going to validate their feelings or their experience. Now, here are your goals when you're communicating validation. The next little set of blanks there on your handout. This is what you're going to try to communicate when you want someone to feel validated. Your feelings are important to me. So tell me what you see as the problem. How does that make you feel about that? You want to understand. Understand and articulate the other point of view. Well, do you think this is really not that bad, or do you think maybe I'm just overreacting to everything? Really? Oh, sorry.
I recognize your feelings, but there's a space there.
Anyway, can you figure it out? All right. If nothing else, you can write it down. So you need to understand and articulate the other point of view. Appreciate and respond to what is actually true about his viewpoint. You know, there may be a nugget of truth in that other perspective that you don't agree with. It may be, you know, you're right. I don't say anything about the problem for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then all of a sudden I blow up about it. You know, that's wrong. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I'm going to work harder on that. And what's really beautiful about this whole setup is that is exactly how God deals with us. He lets us know our experiences are valuable to him. He also requires change. He implements consequences. Those are all the things that he does in love for his children. And in Revelation, when God addressed the seven churches, he kind of addressed them all the same way. And here's what he tells. I wrote there, I think I put it in your notes. Who knows at this point? What he tells the church in Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. First he validates, then he corrects, and then he informs of consequences. Revelation 2:2-5 says, I know all the things you do. I've seen your hard work, your patient endurance. I know you don't tolerate evil people. You've examined the claims of those who say they are apostles but are not. You've discovered they're liars. You have patiently suffered for me without quitting. But I have this complaint against you. You don't love me or each other as you did at first. Look how far you have fallen from your first love. Turn back to me again and work as you did at first. If you don't, here's the consequence. I will come and remove your lampstand from its place among the churches. Change is hard for anyone, but when there is validation and grace soften the burden of that change that is so difficult. And of course, apply this, you know, marriage relationships. It could be a boss, it could be a mother-in-law, it could be a mother. Apply this to all the different types of places where you may be running into a fence-resistant person. So validate. Number 5, this is the last one this morning, love them. When resolving conflicts, any kind of conflicts, but especially if it's a conflict with a fence-resistant person, you must communicate that your goal is to be close to them and not hurt them. Critically important. Fences are all about protecting love. so that it can grow and flourish. Fences are not about changing people or trying to change people or beat them up in some way. And it's not uncommon for people in general to get a bit defensive. But fence-resistant people are going to be very defensive. They're going to feel you're attacking them, that you're condemning them, that you're putting them down, that you're putting all the blame in their lap. All of those things are going to be swirling around. So you have to take responsibility for helping them see that you love them. And especially when you're dealing with a spouse or other close relationship, and that their resistance to this fence that you've established in your relationship is an obstacle to the love that you really do desire to give to them. Repairing the fences reestablishes the love you both desire, and you really do both desire it. I've never met anybody who gave birth to a child who thought, you know, in 30 or 40 years from now, I sure hope we're estranged from one another and we can hardly stand to be in the same room with one another. They desire to be close to their child and to have that love. I've never met a married couple who says, you know, I sure hope that the conflicts just get worse and worse and we grow farther and farther apart as the years go on. You both want that love, and they need to understand that love is what your goal is, and their resistance to your boundary is an obstacle to that love. Love is the goal, not changing them or beating them up about it. Something you're both going for there. So when dealing with a fence-resistant person, if you don't establish you're trying to solve the problem so love can flourish, you will risk being seen as controlling or critical. And the goal of instruction is love. We see in 1 Timothy 1:5, the purpose of my instruction is that all the Christians there would be filled with love that comes from a pure heart, a clear conscience, and a sincere faith. Now, this is not all the do's. We're going to finish the do's next week. I said there was a lot of them, but that's a good thing because it gives you a lot of options to be able to implement in that relationship that are very proactive, that can help change it and make it become a healthier relationship. And even if the relationship doesn't change to the desire that you had hoped it would, you are still going to grow when you take steps to resolve the conflict. You're going to be benefited even if the relationship doesn't quite meet the mark that you had hoped it would. So come back next week. We're going to finish the list of do's.